I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Turning to the spending under the Indigenous Advancement Strategy, why did Broad Spectrum, now called Ventia, receive almost $6 million from the Indigenous Advancement Strategy?
In mid-March, at Senate Estimates, the government faced a series of questions about the way they spend money meant for Indigenous people.
I'll go to my next question. Why did Chevron, Spotless, Sodexo, Australia, Wesfarmers, a company that reported a profit of over $1.2 billion, the Woolworths Group, the Western Australian Police, the Northern Territory Police? Can you tell me about that one?
Since 2014, just over $1.6 billion of Indigenous funding has been paid out to hundreds of non-Indigenous corporations, charities and organisations, with at least $90 million allocated to 10 of Australia's biggest companies. This money, handed out under a program called the Indigenous Advancement Strategy, is meant to tackle the enormous gap in employment and wealth between Indigenous people and the rest of the population. Today, where is the money meant for Indigenous communities going? It's Wednesday, the 7th of April. So, Lorena, we've both reported on how funding works in Indigenous affairs. And in the very short time that I covered this at NRTV, I found it pretty exasperating. How would you describe your experience?
Pretty much the same. Confusing.
Lorena Allam is the Indigenous Affairs Editor at Guardian Australia.
And when you ask a lot of questions of the government about this funding, it's very difficult to get a straight answer, to be perfectly honest. Money doesn't go where it should go. There's a lot of bureaucracy. There's a lot of money directed at Indigenous affairs, but it doesn't seem to be getting where it's needed. And that is the perennial issue. So what the Abbott government tried to do in 2014 was consolidate all of that funding in one big bucket called the Indigenous Advancement Strategy that was supposed to, at the time, really be a massive shake-up of Indigenous spending that would make sure the money would go where it was truly needed, to the grassroots.
I remember this time when the Indigenous Advancement Strategy came in. It was a radical shakeup like we hadn't seen before. Can you just step me through that time and how it came about?
So the Indigenous Advancement Strategy, that we'll probably start calling the IAS from now on, when it began in 2014, it was this kind of amalgamation of a whole bunch of funding that was directed to legal services, community-controlled health organisations. It was all consolidated in one bucket called the IAS. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was worth about $5 billion. Mm. And then in the following year, Tony Abbott took $500 million out of it. So it is now a fund that's worth roughly around $4.8 billion. Mm. And it was Abbott and his Indigenous Affairs Minister, Nigel Scullion, who developed the strategy and who pretty much directed how those funds would be spent.
Mm. Tell me about Scullion.
So Nigel Scullion was a senator from the Northern Territory, from the Country Liberal Party, non-Indigenous man. And Tony Abbott, as we remember, was the self-proclaimed Prime Minister for Aboriginal Affairs. Mm. So between them, they decided that this IAS was going to, quote, improve the way the government does business with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to ensure funding actually achieves outcomes, unquote.
And what did this actually mean in terms of the funding and how it was allocated?
So all of this money was kind of consolidated under five big funding schemes. Jobs, land and economy was one. Children and schooling was another. And most importantly, this was a competitive grants funding process. And so everybody that was usually funded had to start again, had to reapply again and justify their funding. But there was really very little structure that they said they could see around how decisions were made or even when the decisions were made.
Mm. So to be clear, Indigenous organisations that already had funding plus all other organisations had to reapply. What was this like for them?
I think the IAS was established so quickly, people had trouble scrambling to respond to what it was, what they needed to provide in order to qualify for funding. I mean, NITV reported in 2015, I think, that JIRA, which was like a family violence organisation, Aboriginal run and community controlled, were just left out in the cold. They just had no certainty of continued funding to provide essential services. I mean, there was so much confusion and concern in the community that there was a Senate inquiry set up to look into the IAS, specifically into its tendering processes, and it found that there was poor communication, people were uncertain about their ongoing funding, the application process was confusing, and made a whole list of recommendations to the government to fix it up pronto.
So it sounds like a program that was supposed to streamline things and make things simpler and cut waste was leading to a bit of chaos and confusion here. Was this fixed?
Well, of course, the Minister, Nigel Scullion, denied there was any confusion. I mean, he said there were not any programs that had been overlooked.
The Federal Indigenous Affairs Minister, Nigel Scullion, faced an angry protest by Indigenous organisations in Alice Springs over funding cuts today.
That was in 2015.
I focus on what is the best for them.
We can't even...
I have not made a mistake. It's chaotic.
But then the National Audit Office, the ANAO, investigated the IAS.
The strategy was supposed to overhaul and streamline how the federal government funded Indigenous organisations. But the report from the National Audit Office has found it was rushed, ineffective and lacked transparency.
The auditors found that the grants administration process fell well short, quote this, of the standard required to effectively manage $1 billion of Commonwealth resources.
Confusion, inconsistency and a failure to take into account the needs of Indigenous communities. According to the Australian National Audit Office, the federal government's revised Indigenous funding model has fallen short on many fronts.
Pretty scathing stuff.
Wow. What did this lead to, this audit office report?
The ANAO made a series of recommendations that needed to be implemented in terms of evaluation and transparency of funding allocations. I mean, a lot of money seemed to be going out without any clear outcomes attached to it, is what they were saying. And so then in 2019, the audit office came back and looked again and found that 5 years later there had been substantial delays, its words, in setting up a reliable way of measuring those outcomes and programs funded under the IAS. And we've also heard from Aboriginal organisations who just continued to battle against the system and who continued to seek funds and were knocked back.
Like who? Tell me about that.
There was an Aboriginal elders group in Tasmania who wanted a couple of $1,000 to keep the doors open effectively. They applied four times for IAS funding in 2016, 2017, 2018 and 2019. They were knocked back every single time, even though the minister's own department recommended that they be funded.
Why was that decision made?
The elders told me that they never really got any feedback on why they were knocked back. That wasn't an uncommon event. It emerged at Senate estimates that in 28 cases, the minister refused to fund projects that his department recommended be funded. And they were things like, I can give you some examples, they were things like school nutrition programs in several remote communities for Aboriginal kids, a bunch of cadetships at the New South Wales Legal Aid Commission that were named for the late great Indigenous Judge Bob Blair, and the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples, which was an elected body that was operating at the time. They were all examples of things that he declined to fund against his department's advice.
So if these kind of essential sounding programs that came, some of them came at the recommendation of his own department, were not being funded, what was? Where has this money gone over the years?
So effectively, the lion's share of that strategy money went to non-Indigenous organisations. In the first round of funding in 2015, only less than half of the organisations that got funded were Indigenous from the Indigenous Advancement Strategy.
Wow.
So there was this kind of mainstreaming, if you like, and an absorption of Indigenous programs into big companies and charities like the Benevolent Society or Bernardo's or the Smith family. They were getting money from this advancement strategy.
How do people react to that, the fact that non-Indigenous organisations were getting this money?
There was a lot of public backlash, and he was getting questions in the Senate from Labor. So in 2017, Nigel Scullion told the ABC that he, from then on, he would only work with Indigenous organisations.
I've made it very clear that I'd like to go to 100% of the IAS $1 billion a year investment needs to go to Indigenous organisations. Not because I particularly like or dislike Indigenous organisations, it's because all the evidence is that it's better. It has a much better outcome if it's run that way. By the 30th of June 2018, if you're not an Indigenous business, then I won't be doing business with you.
But there was still a large proportion of non-Indigenous companies taking money from this scheme.
How large?
As at October last year, 39% of all Indigenous Advancement Strategy funding, that's like $1.68 billion, is being paid out to 589 non-Indigenous companies, corporations and charities. We do know that to date, at least $91.7 million of that money has been allocated to just 10 of Australia's biggest companies, and they are Crown Resorts, Woolworths and Accor Hotels.
Next, why some of Australia's biggest companies are getting millions of dollars of Indigenous funding. Why are some of Australia's wealthiest companies getting millions of dollars of Indigenous funding? What is this for?
So this comes under another scheme with another acronym. So we're going to warning acronym time. It was called the Employment Parity Initiative, or the EPI. So we have the Indigenous Advancement Strategy, the IAS, and under that we have the Employment Initiative called the EPI, right?
Mm-hmm.
This employment initiative was supposed to increase Indigenous employment in big companies to give people the opportunity to work in a sustainable job for Woolies. You know, you can work your way up the food chain, pardon the pun, and to increase the percentage of Indigenous people who are working in these big corporations. So under this EPI, retailers and companies would be allocated these millions of dollars and they would get paid out once an Indigenous employee reached the 26-week mark or 6 months. So if they employed an Indigenous person who then lasted in a job beyond 6 months, they would get paid out for it from this employment initiative.
And what do we know about which companies got this money and what kind of employment outcomes they have actually achieved?
Right. So they have the companies, we've gone to them, quite a number of those big 10, and they've all given us varying degrees of information about how the money has been spent. I mean, ultimately, they are spending the money on Indigenous employment. So Woolworths was the biggest corporate recipient of EPI money. They got $25 million. They said the money had paid for training for more than 3,200 Aboriginal job seekers over the last 5 years. It seems that every cent of that funding, they said, went to their employment service partner, a company called Diversity Dimensions. So they delivered the program to the Aboriginal and Islander trainees, and then they would bring those people on staff. So Wesfarmers was, you know, the one we mentioned earlier who owned Bunnings and Kmart and Coles. They got paid about $2 million and they've increased their Aboriginal and Islander employment by around 800 people.
So that sounds like quite a few jobs, but these are just figures, really. Do we know how effective and beneficial these employment initiatives have been for Indigenous people?
Important thing to point out is that they only get paid this money if they retain an Indigenous employee beyond 26 weeks. So it's hard to know the effectiveness of these employment programs because the evaluations haven't been made public. While the companies were very helpful in terms of providing us with information, we don't know yet whether people are retained beyond a year, beyond two years, whether those 26-week placements translated into real ongoing full-time jobs. We don't know what people experienced in the workplace. There haven't been any exit interviews that I have seen with people who have left the workplace. There haven't been any reviews that we have seen about retention about Aboriginal staff. At the moment, those numbers, they look promising, but they need to be evaluated, and that is where the National Indigenous Australians Agencies, or NIA, another acronym, which manages the strategy, have to step up now and provide that information.
I suppose even if these companies are doing everything by the book and are creating jobs that are worthwhile to, you know, communities and Indigenous people, I suppose one of the big questions is whether this is something that had to be achieved using government funds, right?
That is the question that's being asked at Senate Estimates, and it's been asked at Senate Estimates so often in the last 4 or 5 years. Like most recently by Green Senator for Victoria Lydia Thorpe, who asked them really bluntly, why is money targeted for Indigenous disadvantage going to some of Australia's biggest corporations?
So why can't they afford it to do it themselves? Do they need black money to do black stuff? Why aren't they just doing it from the goodness of their heart?
And on top of that, some of these companies have been involved in some serious controversies. One of the new grants that appeared on the balance sheet that was given to Senate Estimates in March was a grant to Crown Resorts, which owns Crown Casinos. They got paid $2.29 million out of a potential $3.6 million the government's offered to pay them to employ Aboriginal people beyond 26 weeks. Crown Resorts.
What did you think when you saw that?
I was surprised, to say the least. I mean, Crown, as we know, is facing royal commissions in two states. The Bergen Inquiry in New South Wales found that Crown was not fit to hold a licence here in Sydney, and questions remain about its operations down at Barangaroo. There are allegations of money laundering, of facilitating junkets to high rollers from overseas, links to organised crime. These are serious problems that Crown is facing. As a consequence of the Bergen Inquiry, there was a bit of an exodus from the board of Crown. A number of people resigned. James Packer, the chair, he stepped down in 2018 and made no secret of wanting to sell his interest in the company. A private equity firm from overseas has offered to buy out Crown. So it's a company that has some very serious questions over its past operations and over its future.
What about the reputations of the rest of the companies? Do they stand up?
Again, some of them have questions over their operations. So there was a grant under the Employment Initiative of just over $10 million to Accor Hotels. So you might remember Accor as being at the centre of a racism scandal in Alice Springs in 2019, where it was alleged that they rented the worst rooms to Aboriginal clients. At the time, the company did launch an investigation, said they were appalled by it and apologised, and they've done a bit of cultural awareness training since then. But they got $10.8 million. And another awardee was Spotless, a company that in 2020 admitted to underpaying its workers by about $4 million.
Who in the government has responsibility to assess these companies that they're given millions of dollars to?
Right, acronym alert. It's the National Indigenous Australians Agency, or NIA. They sit within the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, which holds the purse strings, but they report to Ken Wyatt as the Minister for Indigenous Australians. So NIA are the ones who, or NIA, is the agency that determines who gets the money and how much, and then they evaluate the programs that they allocate the funds to. So under the agreements that NIA or NIA signs with these providers of all sizes, shapes and sizes, from the very small to the very large, there's an agreement in which it has the right to terminate an agreement if it thinks a company has breached any law, become bankrupt or insolvent, or, you know, gone into receivership and it's entered into a creditor's scheme, or come under any form of external administration, or if there's been a change of management that would affect its ability to deliver the grant.
I mean, that describes some of the companies that we've just talked about, I feel, right?
Potentially, yes. So we asked that question directly of NIA. Did NIA feel that Crown Resorts, for example, was potentially in breach of its agreement with NIA because it may have fit this criteria? And the NIA spokesperson said that it reviewed providers on a regular basis and would adjust its risk ratings as required.
Do we know if any companies have had their contract terminated?
We're not aware of that, no.
Considering some of the problems that you've outlined with the Indigenous Advancement Strategy, both when it was launched and continuing now, are there any moves to reform this scheme, to change it going forward.
Under questioning at the most recent Senate estimates, the officials did say that they were reviewing this employment program and that the review would be made public at some point in the future.
It strikes me that they launched this program in order to increase efficiency in Indigenous funding, which has, you know, been an issue that's been raised over decades and decades. But 7 years in, we're seeing these problems being raised time and time again and issues being brought up at Senate inquiries. I mean, what are the consequences of this program being run the way it has been run?
I think that transparency and accountability of government funds, and we're talking about billions of dollars, is essential. That every single Australian needs to know where this money is going. And people care, that they want to make sure that it's going to people who really need it.
We are struggling out in community to even put food on the table, yet these mining companies who pay no tax and all of those other corporations who can afford to do the right thing are milking it for what it's worth.
So the question remains, does Wesfarmers need $25 million of government funds to employ Indigenous people? So that question keeps being asked. And it was interesting at Senate Estimates, Lydia Thorpe asked the same question over and over, using a different example of a corporate partner.
Billion-dollar companies don't need government funds, taxpayers' funds, to employ Aboriginal people. They just don't need it. It's not fair.
And this is 7 years of essential services that communities may have gone without.
Our communities need this money, and if you want to close the gap, I would stop giving money to mining companies and these big corporations who are raking it in and don't need the money. Well, it needs to go to the people.
It is important that people know about this. It's important that they take an interest, because this is how the government is, for better or for worse, doing business with Aboriginal people.
That's it for today. Thanks to Lorena Allam for her time. You can read her reporting on the Indigenous Advancement Strategy at theguardian.com, and we've put some links to some of her stories on the full story page. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert and Joe Koning. The executive producers are Gabrielle Jackson and Miles Martignoni. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.